Chapter 10. The Doctor's Power. Darnay's journey through France was slow, and he was often stopped and questioned by patriots. He was staying in a little town, still a long way from Paris, when he was woken in his hotel by the mayor and two patriots in red caps.
"Emigrant," said the mayor. "I'm sending you to Paris, and these patriots will come with you."
"I can travel alone to Paris," Darnay replied.
"No, aristocrats may not travel alone."
So Darnay had to continue his journey at 3 o'clock in the morning with his horse attached to one of the patriots' horses. But he did not allow himself to be worried. He felt sure that when he reached Paris, Monsieur Gabelle would witness that he had not wronged anyone. But in the next town, a noisy crowd was waiting to see him.
"Down with the emigrant!" many shouted.
"My friends, can't you see I've chosen to come here?" Darnay told them. "I'm not an emigrant."
"You're an emigrant and an aristocrat," shouted a man.
"He'll be judged in Paris," another man called.
At the barrier in Paris, a thick-necked patriot came out of the guardroom and loudly demanded,
"Where are this prisoner's papers?"
"I'm a free traveller and a Frenchman," replied Darnay, handing over his papers. After examining them closely, the man asked Darnay to follow him into the guardroom, where an officer was sitting at a desk.
"This is the emigrant Evrémonde," said the man.
"Thank you, Citizen Defarge," replied the officer. "Are you married?" he continued to Darnay.
"Yes."
"Where is your wife?" asked the officer.
"In England."
"You're being sent to the prison of La Force, Evrémonde."
"What?" cried Darnay. "Under what law and for what crime?"
"We have new laws since you were here."
"I've chosen to come here freely to help a French citizen. Isn't that my right?"
"Immigrants have no rights, Evrémonde," said the officer.
He wrote something on a paper, marked it in secret, and gave it to Defarge.
"Take the prisoner away."
Defarge led Darnay out of the guardroom, and as they went down the steps, he whispered,
"Is your wife the daughter of Dr. Manette, once a prisoner of the Bastille?"
"Yes," replied Darnay, looking at him with surprise.
"My name is Defarge, and I have a wine shop in Saint-Antoine. Perhaps you've heard of me."
"Yes. My wife came to your house many years ago to collect her father," said Darnay.
"Why have you come to France? It was unwise."
"Yes, I'm lost here. Will you help me a little?"
"No,"
said Defarge, without looking at Darnay. "Then will you answer one question? Will I be able to contact the outside world from this prison? I'm not going to be buried there without a trial."
"Other people have been buried in worse prisons before now."
"But never by me, Citizen Defarge." Defarge said nothing. "I must contact an English gentleman called Mr. Lorry of Tellson's Bank," continued Darnay. "Will you help me?"
"I'll do nothing for you," said Defarge. "My duty is to my country and the people."
Darnay knew it was useless to say more. He was beginning to realise how dangerous his decision to return to France had been. He would be treated badly in prison, and he did not know when he would see his wife and child again. But he still did not understand the true danger he was in. He had not yet heard of the terrible new machine called the guillotine, which cut off people's heads and was ready to stain the ground red with blood. At the prison of La Force, Defarge handed him to the jailer, saying, "The emigrant Evrémonde."
"Come with me, emigrant," said the jailer, picking up his keys.
Darnay followed him along dark corridors and through heavy doors, which the jailer unlocked and locked behind him. Finally, they came to a low black door and into a cold cell. When the jailer was gone, Darnay thought, "Now I've been left as if I were dead." Tellson's Bank in Paris was in part of a large house that, before the revolution, had belonged to an aristocrat. When the revolution came, the aristocrat had run away. Business at Tellson's continued while its customers were locked in prison or suffered violent deaths. Mr. Lorry had arrived in Paris and was sitting by the fire in his room at the bank.
"How much of the money, silver and jewels here will be lost and forgotten?" he wondered darkly. "Thank God no one dear to me is in this terrible city tonight."
Outside the window, he saw that the patriots had brought a large grindstone into the courtyard, and it filled him with fear. Suddenly, Mr. Lorry's door opened and two people hurried in.
"Lucy, Dr. Manette, what's wrong? What has happened?" cried Mr. Lorry, confused.
Lucy ran to him.
"My husband, Charles," she cried. "He's been in Paris a few days. He came here to help someone without telling us. He was stopped at the barrier and sent to prison."
Poor Mr. Lorry cried out in shock. At the same moment, they heard the sound of loud voices and feet in the courtyard outside.
"What's that noise?"
asked the doctor, turning to the window.
"Don't look," said Mr. Lorry. "You mustn't worry," the doctor answered calmly. "I was a prisoner in the Bastille. There's no patriot in France who will not respect me for that. They won't hurt me. My old suffering has given me a power among them now. They gave us news of Charles at the barrier and brought us here. I can help Charles out of danger. But what is that noise outside?" "Don't look," Mr. Lorry repeated. "Stay away from the window. What prison is Charles in?"
"La Force."
"La Force," repeated Mr. Lorry, shocked. "Lucy, you must be brave and listen to me. Go to the back room while I speak to your father alone."
Lucy quietly obeyed. Then Mr. Lorry took Dr. Manette to the window and they looked out. Two men with long, wild hair and cruel faces were turning the grindstone madly. A crowd of men and women had brought knives, axes and swords that were already red with blood to be sharpened on it.
"They're murdering the prisoners," whispered Mr. Lorry. "If you really have power with these terrible people, get them to take you to La Force. It may be too late, but go at once."
Dr. Manette hurried out to the courtyard, and Mr. Lorry watched as he approached the patriots at the grindstone. For a few moments, everyone listened as the doctor spoke. Then there were cries of,
"Long live the Bastille prisoner! Help his relative in La Force! Save the prisoner Evrémonde!"
Hearing that, Mr. Lorry went quickly to the back room to comfort Lucy. He told her that the people outside had agreed to help her father and were taking him to La Force to look for Charles. Then he walked with her to the house that her father had rented nearby. There, he was shocked to find little Lucy sleeping, with Miss Pross watching over her. He sent at once for Jerry and asked him to guard the house. By the next evening, the doctor had still not returned, and Mr. Lorry was growing anxious. He was in his rooms at the bank when a strong-looking man with dark hair arrived.
"Do you remember me?" said Defarge. "You came to my wine shop 17 years ago."
"I do," answered Mr. Lorry. "Have you come from Dr. Manette?"
"Yes,"
said Defarge, giving him a note. Mr. Lorry read it quickly.
"Charles is safe, but I cannot leave this place yet. Defarge has a note from Charles to his wife. Let Defarge see her."
"Thank God," said Mr. Lorry. "Shall we go to his wife's house?"
Defarge nodded, and the two men went out to the courtyard. There they found Madame Defarge knitting.
"Is Madame coming with us?" asked Mr. Lorry.
"Yes, so that she can recognise the wife and her child," replied Defarge. "It's for their safety."
Mr. Lorry led the way to Lucy's house, and they found Lucy crying. Defarge gave her the note from her husband.
"Dearest, be comforted. I am well, and your father can help me. You cannot reply. Kiss our child for me."
Lucy was so strongly affected by this short note that she turned to Defarge's wife and kissed her hand. But Madame Defarge pulled her hand away and continued her knitting. Lucy looked at her, terrified. Madame Defarge stared back coldly.
"My dear Lucy," said Mr. Lorry, wanting to explain, "there's often trouble on the streets, and Madame Defarge wants to see those she has the power to protect. So bring little Lucy and Miss Pross here too."
When the two came, Madame Defarge stopped knitting for the first time as she looked at little Lucy.
"It's enough," she said. "I've seen them, and we may go."
But Lucy laid her hand on her arm and cried,
"You'll be good to my poor husband. You'll help me to see him if you can."
Madame Defarge stared back at her.
"For a long time, many of our wives have been kept from their husbands, who have been locked in prison. Why should we care about the trouble of one wife now?"
With that, she and Defarge went out.
"Be brave, my dear Lucy," said Mr. Lorry. "There is hope."
"Yes," replied Lucy, "but that terrifying woman has thrown a shadow on me and all my hopes."
Dr. Manette did not return for 4 days. When he did, he managed to keep the awful truth from Lucy. So it was only Mr. Lorry who learned that 1,100 prisoners, men and women, had been killed during those 4 days. The doctor had spoken in court, saying that he had been a prisoner in the Bastille for 18 years. He told them that his daughter's husband was now a prisoner at La Force and argued hard for him to be set free. Darnay was then brought to the court, but the judges would not set him free, and he was returned to his cell. Mr. Lorry was afraid that these experiences might bring back the doctor's illness. But, for the first time, the doctor felt that his suffering gave him strength. Lucy had recalled him to life and he would return her husband to her. The doctor used his power so wisely that he was soon the visiting doctor to three prisons, including La Fosse. He saw Darnay every week and sometimes brought Lucy messages from her husband. But although the doctor tried hard to have Darnay freed, or at least brought to trial, the people would not agree. A terrible new age had begun. The king was taken to the guillotine, and his head was held up for the people to see. 9 months later, the head of his beautiful wife was shown to them too. The Republic was born. There was no rest, no peace, no pity. The prisons were full of people who had done nothing wrong. The guillotine cut off so many heads that the ground was stained red. Among these evils, the doctor walked calmly for 1 year and 3 months, always believing he would save Lucy's husband.